we do such a good job with people talk, and there's such a consciousness of that here at Holden, that I'm going to skip lightly over that, although some of it will be inferred in what I'm talking about, and we're going to move right along to God talk. What it says up here, my entire title, I wrote titles way too long for any bulletin board or anything, and so they left them all off, and all the bottom parts off. How I visualize this is talking about language as a road grader on the journey to grace. I think it's especially apparent to us up here in Holden how much we need road graders. If it weren't that way, we might not be able to get up here. We need something to smooth out the place and make a path for us. And I think of language, no back rows, so scoot in. I think of language as one of those road graders that helps make the path smooth on our journey. So I'd like to have you think about that as we do the whole thing. We're not going to talk a lot about road graders. For one thing, I don't know much about them. Another thing is that they're more mechanical, and I'm thinking in terms of things that are a little bit more earthy. However, they're a real important part of leveling things out and making them so that we can travel. The second part is a bridge builder over grand canyons. I think there are times when there are huge canyons between us. And for many women in the church, the canyon has gotten so big. The more we have gotten sensitized to inclusive language, and when it is not used, there develops a canyon. I think sometimes that, I think during the service, I get tied up when someone says something about brotherhood of man, and I get so angry at that there's a canyon that develops, and I forget what else that's probably wonderful and important that person is saying. So I think of language as a bridge builder over those canyons. And when I was telling my dad about that was my title, he ran back to his enormous files and found a poem that kind of talks a little bit about bridge building, and I'm going to share one verse of that with you. Edwin Markham wrote this: "The builder who first bridged Niagara's gorge, before he swung his cable shore to shore, sent out across the gulf his venturing kite, bearing a slender cord for unseen hands to grasp upon the further cliff and draw a greater cord, and then a greater yet, till at last across the chasm swung the cable, and then the mighty bridge in air." And so our little steps, our little kite strings that go across that chasm, any little effort we make at inclusive language is the beginning of that bridge. And I like that idea of just every little step eventually makes it possible for the whole cable to go across, and pretty soon all of us are talking inclusively, and we have a language that means a whole lot to all of us. So with that kind of introduction, we're going to talk a little bit about the resources that we have, that I've used in studying for this presentation, and then I'm going to share six small stories and six prayer poems that I've written in my journey towards using inclusive language in worship life. One of the early books that spoke loudly to me was Rachel Conrad Wahlberg's book, Jesus and the Freed Woman. And this one is, I believe, available in the library here and possibly in the store. I'm not sure if it's still in the store. She has written three wonderful little books that have been an important part of my journey. They've been some of the kite strings that have gone across those canyons for me. And this one especially has a neat part about God as a mother hen. We'll get back to that. Another book that we sent for in the Women's Center that has a lot of important articles is called Religious Education, and it's the volume on inclusive language, volume 80, number 4. And I sent to the Religious Education Press for this. I think that's what it was called, something about religious education in New Haven, Connecticut. And they said that has a lot of background for study articles in it. Another one, when we talk about God language, is the divine feminine, the biblical imagery of God as female. And this, too, is in the Holden Library, a very helpful resource. And it's by Virginia Ramey Mollenkott. We've heard her speak at CLU. She came down and did a theological conference for women, was one of our keynote speakers for that, and it was just fascinating. She comes out of the more evangelistic background, I believe, and from a church that where she grew up taking the Bible quite literally, and her journey has been one that has paralleled many of those of us who grew up in the Lutheran church, although she wasn't Lutheran. But it's a very helpful book, The Divine Feminine, The Biblical Imagery of God as Female. Another one that is helpful is Inclusive Language in the Church by Nancy A. Hardesty, and it's a good introduction to questions about language today and talks about it in terms of the church. Two newer books that have been meaningful to me, and this one, Sacred Dimensions of Women's Experience by Elizabeth Dodson Gray, has one poem that I'll share with you tonight. And then Sally McFay, I just am going to buy this. This one is from the Holden Library, but I'm going to buy this while we're up here and read it on the way home. I've read a couple sections out of it, called Models of God, Theology for an Ecological Nuclear Age. And it just looks so exciting, I can hardly wait to get into it. In skimming it, I found a couple really neat things to share with you. She talks about the Trinity in some new terms, calls God mother, lover, and friend. And she has a chapter on each one of those. Quite interesting. I haven't read them, so I don't know exactly how she develops that, but it's an interesting way of just expanding all the more our idea of God. Organized here. I'm going to read the 23rd Psalm as it was printed on the back of one of my cherished little Lutheran women magazines that used to come with poetry a lot of times on the back of them. And this one came out in 84, and somehow or other I seem to hang on to things. I don't know if your house looks like mine, but I was flipping through looking for an article that I had misplaced and found this 23rd Psalm. The Lord is my mother. I want for nothing. She lays me down at night. She takes my hand by day as we stroll by the sea. She makes me feel good about myself. She guides me in the right direction for her name's sake. Sometimes I must walk through lonely alleys, but you're with me, Mom. Your wit and your compassion, they encourage me. You prepare me a strengthening meal in front of those who would make fun of me. You bathe me in your perfumed oil. Your love spills over me. I expect good and even great things to happen to me, and I will be at home in the Lord's house forever. I love the 23rd Psalm the way it's written in our RSV, and I love the 23rd Psalm written this way. And my world is richer because Ramona C. Carroll wrote that and shared a little bit more of what God was like. I don't know about you, we live in a valley that 25 years ago, or maybe 30 now, was covered with shepherds and sheep. It was a sheep raising area on the outskirts of Los Angeles. Now it's covered, unfortunately, by houses and stores and filling stations and the university. But for most people, a shepherd is a rather foreign experience, unless you happen to have grown up in the Midwest or live near a rural area. For most of the people in Los Angeles, that isn't a familiar metaphor. So adding to the metaphor in one way or another, or to the suggestion of what God might be like, is helpful to a lot of people. I'd like to have you close your eyes and promise not to open them for a little while. We're going to go through one of these closing your eyes exercises that I always kind of wrinkle up my nose when I when we try them, but I'm going to make you do it anyway. I want you to do some imagining. Come on, close your eyes. I want you to picture a woman in your mind, any woman. It could be your mom or your grandma or a good friend. She is warm. She is soft. She is smiling. Picture yourself in her arms. They're strong arms. Maybe you are a baby and your mother is rocking you. Maybe you are a child and this woman is comforting you for some reason. It is someone who loves you very much. She is warm. She is strong. She is smiling. She is holding you and loving you. Every bit of you. You're enveloped in love. It feels good. Let yourself feel that warmth. Just feel it. Now open your eyes and think. God's love is like that. And more. God loves us and cares for us. And we are all held in God's arms, always. When we, who have grown up in the church, think in terms of God, how is it, if you were to just tell me real quickly, as a child and in your growing up years, how you pictured God in your mind. What image did God have in your mind? Think back on what you thought God looked like when you were a child.
Like the feeling we had in our church for the story of the children.
Uh-huh. Okay, sitting on a rock
with... was that German face.
Uh-huh. A German face with kind of long hair and white skin and yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyone else?
Our church, he went to Norwegian.
Of course.
He was a white-haired old man.
All right. How many thought of God as a white-haired old man? I think that was a pretty prevalent. We used to get Sunday school leaflets. Did you get leaflets that had a colored picture on the front and the story in the middle and the memory verse on the back? And not only was he a white-haired old man, but he had white robes that kind of flowed. What else? What other kinds of images did you have?
White halo. Maybe not a halo. That's more bright.
Uh-huh. But light and shiny?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. Any other images?
He was in the clouds and in the wind.
Okay. The Holy Spirit concept, the clouds and the wind.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Earthy and able to make things grow.
And
strong. Mm-hmm. Did anyone as a child ever image God as a woman? I don't think any of us probably, any of us in this room ever did. Would that have been a problem?
What about the Catholic solution, Mary, Mother of God? Does that satisfy partially this.
It doesn't for me. I don't
for
know.
Catholics,
would somebody? I don't know whether it does to Catholic women. Many of the Catholic theologians are the ones that are leaders in this whole idea of a more inclusive language for God. So I would assume that maybe there were a lot of Catholics that didn't feel that really described God as more than just. Wasn't a problem because it wasn't an issue, right? Okay. I think that's the way it was for me too. For me, it wasn't a problem to think of God as Father. I had a wonderful father and a wonderful grandfather, one whom I didn't hardly know at all, and one who reminded me a little bit of what I pictured God about to look like. And so that wasn't a problem. It wasn't an issue because more or less we hadn't thought about the language issues though. But that was a long time ago when I was a child, and maybe it's different for you.
Talk about that a little bit more though, because I've heard you say that one of the problems of thinking of God as a father is that not all fathers are like different. Mm-hmm. And if somebody is not a bad father, there will be no father, so maybe there will be a father, but there will be no father. Then the thinking in terms of God is father, that's a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
But couldn't the same thing be said if you have a bad relationship with your mother?
Mm-hmm. Of course. I think that...
Or if your mother isn't like this beautiful mother that
you chose. Yeah, right. I think that's where, on both sides of that coin, where images break down in different ways for different people. Like for some people that I know, and I hear more and more about this, the image of Father as God is so painful because they have had abusive relationships with the image, with Father. And that when the word Father is even mentioned, that hurts inside. But at the same time, there are women who have had abusive relationships with their father who want that image because it's the father that they never had. There's a woman, is God the only reliable father? By one of the feminist theologians, and I can't remember her name right now, but she argues that God as Father becomes that male image that someone hasn't had in their life. So, see, even for different people, using only one image might affect us differently. My thesis is, and I think the thesis of many of these women who are struggling with these issues, is that we are bereft when we have only one image of God. The Bible is full of images of God, male, female, and a whole lot more. I was on a task force, Inter-Lutheran Task Force for Women. This was before the merger. That's why we were Inter-Lutheran. Now we're just Lutheran Task Force. And we came up with three columns, single-spaced, of images of God, just as suggestions for pastors in our synod to use. And there are all kinds of different things, inanimate. I won't read the whole list, but I'll read a few of them. Gracious donor of our days, holy one, heavenly parent, nurturer, breath of life, birth giver, author of creation, weaver of the cloth of life, quickening spirit, God before the dawn of time, sustainer. I mean, you know, there's tons of ways that we can describe God and pictures that can bring in our mind. And why is it that in our church we have gotten to the point where so often, we're getting better at it, but where so often we start our prayers, Dear Father in heaven, as though that were the only way to address God. I mean, when we were growing up, that was basically it. Or when you were very little, you said, Dear Jesus. And then as you grew up, you said, Dear Father. And I read an interesting paragraph here that I was going to share with you. And this is a quote from Sally McFaig's Models of God. Father, Mother, God, loving me, guard me while I sleep, guide my little feet up to Thee. This prayer, which theologian Herbert Richardson reports reciting as a child, impressed upon his young mind that if God is both Father and Mother, then God is not like anything else he knew. He didn't know of anybody else that was a mother-father or a father-mother. No other creature was. The point is worth emphasizing, for as we begin our experiment with the model of God as Mother, we recall that metaphors of God, far from reducing God to what we understand, underscore by their multiplicity and lack of fit the unknowability of God. This crucial characteristic of metaphorical language for God is lost, however, when only one important personal relationship, that of father and child, is allowed to serve as a grid for speaking for the God-human relationship. In fact, and this is the sentence that is underlined over and over in my mind as I struggle with this issue and study it. In fact, by excluding other relationships as metaphors, the model of father becomes idolatrous, for it comes to be viewed as a description of God. So, you know, I see a lot of heads nodding, and I am sure that many of us, especially a lot of people that have been to Holden more than once and have been continually exposed to this, probably don't have a lot of difficulty accepting the idea that God can be talked about in a variety of ways and that we can use a variety of language to describe the God that means so much to us. So I'm probably not going to have to convince a lot of you that it's important to do. But what I find really interesting is that there is a large body of people in the church and many books written and many women theologians and men theologians struggling with this issue, and still things don't change a whole lot in our church. And I wonder why. You know, maybe it takes a bunch of people on fire to go home to our own congregations or our own relationships, whatever they may be in life, and say, come on, you know, there are more than one way of talking about God. Most of my stories and poetry that I'll be sharing with you tonight are really about God as Mother. And that's, right now, that's where I am in my journey. But I'm looking to expand that to other images, too, and to be able to write poetry about other things too.
I really think you're trying to go against the waves. The wave of our culture at the present time says the Bible is to be taken literally. This is increasing all the time. Number one. Number two, the wave of the present is that we are almost supplanting worship of God with worship of Jesus. We're insisting in this fundamentalist push on a personal relationship with God who saves us. It is Jesus who saves us. And many of them, when they pray only, Lord Jesus. Now, is this a solution? Because your solution is very, very difficult for people who've gone through as many years as some of us have. For me to say, our Mother who art in heaven, it's just like, hey.
Wait a minute.
I'm asleep, but this is another world. I've died. You know, I can't deal with that. And so I
want, but you're a man, too.
I want a personal relationship. So what do I do? As a pastor, I keep looking for ways.
Uh-huh.
And so I say, our gracious God, our dear Lord, all kinds of things.
I'd love to see that list. Like, I'd love to go home with a copy of that list.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, I think for a lot of us, the problem isn't so much in here. I mean, I still react when somebody says, Mother God, and the next seven words are gone. And that's better than the next 40 words that it was a couple of years ago. But I think it's, a couple of those of us who feel that way to try, when we had the opportunity to do prayer, you know, like high street analogy, at least be neutral.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't do very well. The Lord is about how far I get, and that's a little bit male.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there's some people that have trouble with that, but
yeah.
But you know, I think that it's interesting to me. It's troublesome for you when we change the language, and it's troublesome for us when we don't change the language. So that's why I think about this inclusive thing is not. I'm not suggesting in any way to replace all the father image with mother image. I'm not suggesting that at all. That would just be a reverse discrimination, and pretty soon all the men coming to church would feel so uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I also have a lot of women friends who are not into the language issues. I mean, they're women, and they say, especially women that are my age and older, who say, well, I grew up knowing that man meant everybody. The problem is it doesn't mean everybody anymore to everyone all the time. It slips back and forth between meaning men sometimes and meaning males sometimes and meaning humankind. So therefore, it's confusing. And when people say all men are invited to church breakfast on Saturday morning, you know, I presume that means all males. But when they say all men are encouraged to come and receive God's grace at the table, you know, I'm sure what they're meaning is men and women. Now, our pastor is very good at inclusive language in terms of the people language. And
well, that part's generally on the way out.
Yeah, that's getting a lot better. I was trying to answer your question. I just read something about that this afternoon. Somebody had brought up that same argument in this one of these books, and I'll have to look for that and help find it. It was one of these books was talking about people who take the Bible literally and the canon as unchangeable in terms of what books are in the Bible, and for some of them the language issue is difficult, but some of them are still willing to look at the language issue even that way, which is where I think some of the ones like Virginia Mollenkott and some of those people who grew out of that whole way of looking at the Bible would be able to help us a lot. And I'll try to find out where it was that I saw that quote that was kind of, I thought, oh, next time somebody says that, I'll be able to say that. But I think, you know, I think it is a difficult question to know how to convince people to think about these issues if they're perfectly satisfied without thinking about them.
Is the solution to come up with a neutral noun for God?
Like
in other words, God is neither male nor female, and it has never struck me, I have never thought of God as my father, the equivalent of my father. I never thought of God in those terms. I've always been impressed by the tremendous greatness far beyond any human being. It's totally not comparable to human. So maybe what we need is like in Latin, they have masculine, feminine,
and neuter. Well, I'm sure that the pronoun problem has a lot to do with it. You know, when and I sometimes say I talk about God as she, because it's meaningful and helpful to me. I don't always do that. Sometimes I say he also. I think that that no human term can ever quite describe God, and there's nothing. I mean, God is so much more than any words that we can ever paint God with. And so I think that the more kinds of ways we talk about God, the more meaningful and helpful it is to more people. And that's why I guess I just keep on with the struggle.
If that's true, why don't you appreciate what they were saying about referring to God as gracious God?
I do. I'm not saying that that's not a good idea at all.
Why wouldn't that be the most helpful thing? For some of us, Father brings our negative connotations, and for some of us, the mother brings our negative connotations. Why isn't it better just to talk about the gracious God?
I have a problem with always keeping it neutral and not talking about it, but what were you going to answer that?
The issue is that, mm-hmm. but the broader
That's another interesting question. How it was that in the Bible there are both masculine and feminine images of God. Jesus used many of them and likened himself to a mother hen and to a persistent homemaker that swept until she found the lost coin and a variety of things like that. But you know, those kind of images have been kind of lost, and we've lifted up the male images. And I guess that's where it's so exciting to see these images uncovered and broadening. And to answer your question about why not gracious God, I believe in gracious God, and I think that's a wonderful term. And there are lots of terms like that that are totally inclusive and wonderful ways to, and many of the ones on this list are. But there are times when that interpersonal relationship, that human relationship, is so important in our understanding. And to me, that has to be some human words that also, and that's why parent and father and mother and all of those, sister, brother, all of those are warm and human and more personal kinds of words. So I think you need, I mean, you know, I wouldn't give up gracious God or sovereign one or any of the other kinds of descriptions that are far more neutral, but I wouldn't want to give up the parent images either.
I'm just thinking of the average congregation, and as a pastor in the average congregation, I'm not ready to be moved to the next church because I insisted our mother who art in heaven.
that's why it's important for Holly and other people like myself who are lay people to be instrumental in this, right?
Right. I think that's a real good point, that from the ground up, yeah, that can come.
Kent, come on.
I guess, Howard, as a person who's been here a year, when I first came, I didn't know anything about this language, and I kept saying, well, I can just change it. I mean, teaching Bible songs to the kids was like, they already knew all the songs and they're on key. And I just said, well, I'll just change it. You know, I changed it in my head. But as the years have gone by, I really appreciate the inclusive language. It sort of grows on me. And I think two examples I can give is Elmer Witt's last four sermons, I think. He was really a good speaker, and his inclusive language, his way he structured the sermon, you never, almost never heard a pronoun. And so you never got tripped up at all. He just talked and you listened and didn't realize it, or you didn't even notice it, that it was inclusive. And the other thing...
Well, I'm for that.
When I went home for Christmas...
And I tried that.
I went to my church, and I just couldn't believe the sermon, because I didn't realize how much I had listened or had become accustomed to inclusive language until the home of Christmas and had a new pastor. He was trying in his 50s. And he just used he all the time. I mean, it was just this sentence structure. And he this and he that. And it was like, it was really hard to understand. Also, Jerry Ann, who lives here, she's 13 now, she's been here 2 years, and she picks up on it right away. I mean, it's like, because she's been growing up with inclusive language, and she says, why is it always male?
Well, if I ever slip and say he, why, it bothers me the rest of the day, because I don't do it, see. But nonetheless, I'm still not ready to go this other step and upset half the congregation.
That's the word creative.
I guess I would hope that there would be some time when you would use an inclusive type thing for God that had to do with mother, not starting out with in the Lord's Prayer, because that's something that is so terribly dear and traditional to people. How about starting out with some of the other prayers? And I think if it's all right with you, we'll kind of move into the second part, which was the stories and the prayers, and these might be examples of ways that people can begin to think in this. I've put a pack of paper that has something written on the back side, and we'll use the other sides if you want, and some pencils here. And if any of you feel like writing something that would be similar to the kinds of things that I'm suggesting now, I'd like to encourage you to have a piece of paper. In fact, let's just pass it around. Anybody feels like jotting down while I'm talking some ideas that might be similar in your in your minds, and just sort of use it as an exercise to think of new ways to language, to use our language about God. You know, it was interesting. Remember when we were kids, they used to talk about sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me? But I kind of think that I always had a problem with that, because I always thought names did hurt. And she uses that same thing. She says, no matter what we call something, how we name it, it is to a great extent what it is to us. And as your God grows and my God grows and your God grows, God can be more to us than just one thing. And so it says, it follows then that naming can be hurtful and that it can also be healing and helpful. So I think, Howard, I guess my challenge to you would be, if half of the congregation would be angry because you used inclusive language for God, maybe the other half would be extremely fulfilled and nourished by that. And why is it that the anti people are often the ones that control what how we do? And I understand, you know, I understand that church needs to be a place where everyone feels welcome, but I also think that we can nudge gently.
I do that constantly.
And I'm sure you do. One of the early times in my journey towards inclusive language and thinking in terms of the God language was helped by a little piece of paper that I found on Vic Schoonover. He's a pastor friend of ours in Omaha, tacked with a magnet on his refrigerator. And I was so impressed with it that I copied it down, and I've carried it with me in my billfold ever since. Whether God be he or she, Madam, Lord, or Ms., let us always mindful be, God above all is. And I think about that a lot. It's just kind of a...
Who wrote it?
I don't know who wrote it. I found it. It was a friend of ours. Vic Schoonover is a pastor of my husband's home congregation in Omaha. He had it on his refrigerator. Anyway, it's got me thinking, and I thought a whole lot about different ways of addressing God and thinking about God. I remembered that God is like a father, and when we pray, we can say our Father. But Jesus also said, God is like the persistent homemaker and the woman who lost a coin and searched and swept. And Jesus compared himself to a mother hen gathering her chicks under her wing. What a warm and comforting image that is. Think of what that motherly metaphor tells us about God. And if you want to read a delightful chapter about that mother hen image, get this book, Jesus and the Freed Woman. And she talks about that a whole lot, and says that perhaps the reason that it isn't a part of our regular study, that our regular text that we use all the time, is simply because it did not speak to the pastor's own life experience. I think that maybe the pastor wasn't comfortable with talking about God as mother hen. There was one, I don't have one of the books here, one of them that I was looking at, can't find the thing, that was talking about another poem about Mother Hen, can't find it anyway. So I have these six small stories and six poems. The first one is called, and these come from my own journey, from my own experience. The first one is called The Parable of the Ripped Skirt. My twin sister and I, Kathleen and I, grew up in a parsonage where there wasn't a lot of money, and my mother always wanted to dress us alike. So since there were two, they had to buy two sets of skirts or dresses or whatever all the time. They didn't come around very often, but we had gotten for Christmas some red wool skirts, the kind that are pleated, and we begged and begged to be allowed to wear them to school, and so that we could show off to our friends that we had finally a new skirt. So we did, and it must have been spring by the time we convinced her to do this, because we were playing outside for recess. And I don't know how many of you went to a school where you had swings on the playground. I guess a lot of schools don't have them anymore because they're somewhat treacherous when there's too many children playing. But we would pump up, you know, and then we would jump out at the top. Well, on that very day, I pumped up higher than I had ever pumped before. And I jumped out, and part of my skirt stayed on the swing. I'm all torn up, God, ripped apart by anger, guilt, pain, fear. Take my frayed edges into your gentle hands. Pull me together into a healed whole. Mend the fabric of my soul with the strong thread of your gracious love. Weave the torn threads of my life into a bright new tapestry, marked by your unmistakable design. Sewing one, mending one, weaving one, make me whole again. My mom was a really good mender. She would mend holes in socks and holes in dish towels and holes in clothes, and she even fixed my red skirt. This one's the parable of bread. Six loaves in one oven, or Saturdays at our house. I don't know how many of you grew up, I mentioned this in one of the other sessions, that Mom baked bread every Saturday. And so we had the feeling that Wonder Bread was a treat. Can't believe I ever thought that. But we had homemade bread every weekend, and it smelled like Holden every Saturday at our house, that the way Holden smells here. And baking bread was almost, for my mom, well, I guess it seemed like what I guess what a sacrament is like. I mean, she would knead and knead, and the bread would rise, and she would set it on Friday night, and then it would rise overnight and always fall out of the bowl, and she'd get up and get it all caught back up into the bowl and punch down and rise and make into loaves. I think of my mom when I think of how to address God. She is for me what Father is for many people, and Father is for me too, a way of seeing what God might be like. I'm whole grain, God, just as you made me. Full blown, healthy, unique, complete. Neither bleached nor unbleached, neither partial nor perfect, and certainly not very refined. I'm whole grain, God, like her, like him, like all your seeds, each in your likeness. But whole grain isn't enough. Turn me into bread. Mix me into a wholesome dough. Knead me with your strong, gentle hands. Shape me tenderly and firmly. Make me into a loaf, that I may rise to my full potential, expanding in the warmth of your strong fire. Let me nourish your children, sustain the starving, delight the hungry, fill the empty. I can't be bread of life, but maybe seeded rye or a little cracked wheat on the plates of my sisters and brothers. Whole grain, God, make me a loaf, stirred, kneaded, rising, baked in the warmth of your love, with you nourishing my neighbor. And another mom bread image. You're like my mother, God. You fed 5,000 with some trout and a loaf of homemade bread. My mom can cut the last chocolate in the box into 16 pieces so we can all have a taste. Or feed the whole clan or the neighborhood with a meatloaf and a lot of imagination and still have leftovers. Maybe not 12 baskets full, but enough to take a bite to ancient Amanda, who's all alone and hungry. Creative she is, like you, the creator, in whose image she's made. Cooking woman God, nourishing your children with your wholesome life bread. You're like my mother, God, and through her, I have come close to you. And this is the parable of the cleaning woman. When we live in the Kaneo Valley, and there's a drive down to Los Angeles that gets consistently more smoggy the closer you go, and a lot of times it's not totally the cleanest looking world. There's oftentimes beer cans and trash along the edges, and in the time of the year when things aren't green, it looks pretty gray and ugly. But one day I had to go down to a meeting down near downtown LA, and it had been raining for about a week in Southern California, and I was absolutely astonished at the world. It was just gorgeous. And so those of you that have lived
I lived there long enough that I found a way to see them. The roof.
Yeah. Well, you can probably very much relate to this. And I felt like singing all the way down, and this is what came out of that experience. Dear God, you really went on a cleaning spree. My world sparkles this morning. This week, you washed the earth on days painfully gray, sending torrents to tear loose the cornered dirt and collected webs of our ordinary days, blow-drying the oozing dampness with your fierce and gentle winds, decorating the hillsides and heavens in brilliant green and blue. Your housework is world work, God, and I stand in awe before the results. That's a good place for an amen, God, but I know we're not finished. Suddenly, I'm uncomfortable dragging my dirty feet into your shining world. I know I'm a mess. God, will you make me clean too? Wash off all my prejudices, my preoccupations, and my pettiness. Warm me with your fresh and caring wind. Color me compassionate and kind. Then lead me into your rain-washed world. Let me enjoy all its exploding beauty after the storm. It won't stay clean, nor will I. But for the moment, dear Mother, my God, I stand in awe and praise you for the wonder of this sparkling day. And the next story is called Rabbit by the Runway, or Living in a Technological Age. I was sitting on a huge plane in flying out of Minneapolis back to Los Angeles after a meeting. And for some reason, we were sitting there for a long time. And you know how the exhaust on the planes or the thing comes out and makes things that look like that? I don't know. A scientist could describe it, but it looked like that to me. And just kind of waves of breath. And you know how the runways look streaked because of all the planes that have come down and the rubber that's on the road? And there was this particular runway had patches of grass in between, and it wasn't quite midsummer, so they weren't bright green, they were just kind of partially green. And on this patch of grass outside the window of the plane was this little rabbit, and it was rushing around and looking like it was extremely lost. And so I got out the airline stationery and wrote this, and then I copied it over into something else. Rabbit by the runway, trapped in splotchy grass between the concrete, cavorting on the fume-graced carpet, mindless of the cacophony, the steel and flesh birds roaring over her playground. Or is she? Mother, mother, where am I? Where are you? I call and you do not hear. Or do you? Are you there? Pop into the haze and nuzzle me with your warm assurance. Play with me in this technological trap. Nourish me with your warm milk and strong body. Lead me across that rubber-streaked hard place, Mom. out into the freedom of the unfenced places, times beyond this little patch. Please, Mom. Please. Amen. And the last one is the parable of the supper table. When we lived in Longmont, Colorado, and not too far from where you lived for a while in Greeley, the parsonage was right next to the church, and across the street was this empty lot, and it was a wonderful place to play. My mom had this habit of wanting to eat about 5:30, and none of our friends ate till 6 or 6:30, and we didn't want to come in. And sometimes she would have to really get after us. She'd call us with her whistle that I learned. And it didn't work on us, nor did it work always on my kids, but it was a handy thing to have. And she would have to come and come and come and call and call and call, and finally we would get in. And it reminded me of how God is always calling us. Come for dinner, she called, and I, rebellious and independent, chose to play in the intriguing dusk a little longer. More influenced by the tug of peers and playthings than the invitation of a loving mother. Come for dinner, she called, again and over again, patiently, firmly, again and over again. Exasperated, she stalked into the dimming dusk, disappointed, but ever so forgiving. Hand in hand, we came to the table. Sweet, loving communion, bread of love and life. So, does anyone have any of your poems that you have written or your prayers that you've written that you'd like to share? Or have you had time to write? What I'd like to challenge you with is, you probably have to leave the pencils here because they belong to Jennifer, I think, but take the paper with you as maybe jot down something on it to remind you what you're going to write on that paper, and take it and keep it in your pocket or your purse or something until you can think of something that you could write that would be a new way of addressing God, a new kind of prayer to God that would just expand your way of thinking of your God. And then if you, we're going to be here till Sunday, and if you feel like you could share it with me, I would love to hear them. You've been so patient to listen to my stories, I'd like to hear yours. And I do thank you for coming.